Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears coming at you here on a Thursday morning, Thursday, September 25th, 2025, 9:25:25. There's some numbers for you. 13 and a half minutes past the hour, and we're going to have a good show today because, once again, we have Frank Gibson with us to further explore tying development of the workforce with economic and community development. And in hour number two today, we are going to take phone calls. So if you have a question about anything we talk about in hour number one, or in hour number two, feel free to call in hour number two. Frank will be taking your phone calls. Frank, it's good to have you back here today.
Hey, Scott. Thanks for having me back. I enjoyed the first session and looking forward to this discussion.
Yep. Information is always a good thing, and I do want to let the listening audience know that this program today is brought to you by the Industrial Channel, so we certainly thank them for doing that. Frank, you were here not too long ago. Kind of recap what we talked about last time.
Okay. A couple things, and we're all about connecting workforce development with economic and community growth in nine counties. They focus on getting businesses, schools, government, community groups, and labor to work together to tackle workforce needs and to boost the economy. And Manufacturing Career Connections is all about advocating and promoting careers in manufacturing. Who's involved? We talked about five communities of interest. To make workforce development successful, you need everyone on board. Example, businesses, schools from pre-K through college, government, community groups, and labor. These groups are all play a supporting Workforce Alliance initiatives. The key industries, three big private sector industries in the Manufacturing Career Connections region are agriculture, healthcare, and manufacturing. Manufacturing is a major player with over 44,000 workers across 653 manufacturing companies. And keeping and attracting businesses and workers is in all the nine counties that we work in, and I'm sure it's all around the state. To keep and attract businesses, it's important to stay in touch to understand their challenges, ensure there's a skilled workforce, and usually the economic development people use a 45-mile radius from the point that the business is that has a need or a new business coming in, and offer investment subsidies and make regulatory processes smoother for workers or smoother for the businesses. Workers, it's about affordable housing, childcare, transportation, quality of life, flexible schedules, workplace culture, opportunities for advancement, good wage benefits, and training. Training should be a shared responsibility within organizations, not just HR's job. And those are some of the points we talked about, and teamwork and collaboration. Effective workforce economic and community development. You need alignment, integration, and collaboration among economic development, community development, and workforce development groups. This includes active participation in business advisory councils that focus on career readiness, technical education, and workforce-based training.
What are the current workforce challenges faced by the manufacturing sector in our region?
That's a good question. Manufacturing sector in our region faces challenges such as shortage of skilled labor, aging workforce, and difficulty in attracting younger workers. Those are just a few, and there is additionally a need for continuous upskilling to keep pace with technological advances. So it's our focus is going to be mainly on workforce, because that's what we talk about a lot. But you can't help but, like I say, tie economic and community development in with that.
You know, it's very interesting because we hear about younger workers all the time who maybe don't want to go into certain jobs. Why do you think that is?
You know, what we're hearing is the greatest influencer is the parents and mostly the mother. So it's according to how they feel about that in a sense, because they don't have firsthand knowledge on what it's all about. I can recall going into one school when we started questioning high school students, and we talked about manufacturing, and one of them raises her hand and said, "What's manufacturing?" We knew we had a lot of work to do.
You know, it's interesting because I've talked to some people who were probably of the baby boom generation, and a lot of them did spend their work career in factories, and they don't speak of it very well, their job. They liked the money, that the money was better than they would be making maybe doing a service job, but it was hard work. It was monotonous work. They didn't like it. Has the work itself changed, and maybe that's rubbing off on their children because they heard that for so long?
You know, I can reflect back to when I first started as a press operator way back in 1968. But that was before OSHA. That was before the EPA and some of the other regulatory organizations and things like that. So you've seen a lot of change in how the machines were made, made it safer for them. The lighting got better. Actually, automation and robotics entered in probably the 70s. And a lot of people look at it as robotics and AI and some of the other stuff just coming in now. But the jobs, if anything, have changed. It's when that automation and robotics comes in, you need higher skills. And if the labors that was mostly hand lifting, moving parts and stuff like that, you see that go away, but it takes that knowledge and understanding and awareness to for them to be able to function. So labor unions come into play. Those that usually had labor unions were the ones that could not figure out how to get along. And I know I served on the Employee Participation Council for several years and got to see quite a few business and labor organizations sit at the table and discuss things. But jobs, have they changed in manufacturing? I think it's a cleaner environment, safer environment in most cases. You might get into a foundry and you might change your mind a little bit, but in most cases, manufacturing is just as good a place to work as anywhere.
I was shocked about 15 years ago. I spent about a week out at Yachio looking at what they do here in Marion. And it was fascinating to me because it was a higher paying job at the time. I'm not sure where it is now, but it was definitely at that time a higher paying job. The employees wore white uniforms. So if they were getting dirty and things of that nature, you certainly could tell. It didn't seem like that kind of a job. I'm sure from time to time they did, but it wasn't a daily activity. It wasn't heavy lifting. I mean, it was gas tanks that were plastic, more or less, so they weren't doing hard work. Now, I could see where it might become a little monotonous for them, but it's certainly, I think the idea when they tell you you're going to start a job and you need steel-toed boots and you're going to have a uniform, a lot of people get the mindset of this is going to be a really hard job and this is going to be a really physical job because I have to wear a uniform, I got to keep my toes protected. But the time I was there and the lines that I saw didn't seem like it. The most difficult thing I know, I was there during the summer. It was hot, but that's about it.
Yeah. A lot with why workers stay and why workers go is the culture of the organization. It's the environment and how they're treated while they're there. It's sometimes the wage and benefit package is similar everywhere else, but they may take the jump and leave because they weren't being treated right. So there's a lot of emphasis on people-oriented leaders that understand that, and they create a culture that's around people.
Why do you think that the younger worker would rather work at, you know, let's say McDonald's, and nothing wrong with working at McDonald's, but when faced with not going to college, that they would rather work at McDonald's than a factory?
It could be. That's an interesting one. And what we've seen is that sometimes the people that's in manufacturing today started there, started in fast food or retail or something like that. And they've seen the opportunity to move into something else, and they grabbed it. I think what we're hearing from the businesses is they have no work experience. And growing up, I was a paper boy. I mowed grass. I raked leaves. I shoveled snow. You know, we were associated with that kind of thing. Today, the parents, I believe, don't think it's a safe world out there for their kids. And they want to keep them close so they don't get hurt in some way. You know, there's a lot of crazies out there in the world. But I think that's one of the biggest challenges is getting that work experience. You might talk to a restaurant owner, and I said, okay, what's the youngest worker you have? Normally it's 13, somewhere around that, but said, we have a 12-year-old right now. As long as the parent agrees and they sign a work release, then we're okay with that. And you see a lot of kids grow up in that environment, and they learn one thing that I think is critical is customer service.
Well, and you know what's fascinating to me, because I talked about what I witnessed at Yachio. If you go into a restaurant, I worked at a restaurant when I was in college, high school. That was my first job. And working, and I worked out front, but I saw what obviously went on in the back of the house. And working the dishwasher in a busy restaurant, or working in the kitchen, cooking that food, that's not an easy job. That is you get dirty, you get wet, you get hot. It's not an easy job, but for some reason, it's not seen. It's probably harder work than being in a factory in most cases. But people don't see it like that. They see it as easier, even though it probably is not.
Yeah. Team environment, it comes to mind when you talk about that. And as you go into those fast food chains, or you get into a mom-and-pop restaurant or whatever, they work together. You see that. Or they don't. You see that. And it's if you talk to the owners and whatever, it said they can point out each one of their people, and there's a little history or story behind it, but they have the person that's training them that is good, is a good people person, positive, and they're going to teach them things to help them move up quicker. And maybe they're, washing dishes one day, bussing tables. But the next thing you know, they may be cooking, or they're the server out there, the one that's making sure that everybody's happy with what they have.
You know, before we move on to our next question here, but I've often wondered on this topic, because I think this is an interesting topic to start the morning with. I've often wondered if the reason that people like service jobs, department stores, restaurants, whatever it may be, over manufacturing factories, is that factories, one thing, I mean, a lot of times they hand you earplugs, and you can't really have conversations to the degree that you have them in a restaurant with your coworkers or with people who are coming in from outside, because in a factory there aren't people coming in from outside. And I've often wondered if that's the big drawback that people see.
Sometimes it can be noisy. And you got a lot of background noise. But normally the ones that have worked there for quite some time know they have to be face-to-face with people when they're having these discussions. And I think that's a big one. I've got a hearing problem, so I have hearing aids. And if they're not working properly, sometimes I misread what somebody says. And I think that happens no matter whether it's in a factory or whether it's in retail or whether it's in a fast food place or anything like that. So I think it's they learn how to do that, and they know that they have to communicate well with them.
Communication is always a big thing. How can we better align educational programs with the skills needed by local manufacturers?
That's another good question. We can better align educational programs by fostering the partnerships between educational institutions and local manufacturers. And you see this going on. This can include, you know, developing curriculum that reflects their industry's needs. It could be offering internships and apprenticeships and providing hands-on training opportunities. So those are a few of the things that I believe helps that.
I think this is a big one. What role can community organizations play in supporting workforce development for manufacturing?
Another great question. What I see is the two major players in workforce development, I'm going to say this, in organizations is economic development and the chambers of commerce. And they have a good relationship with organizations like Ohio Means Jobs, Job and Family Service, the ones that can help provide subsidies to workers that have needs and things like that. We can help by providing support services, such as career counseling, job placement assistance, and training programs. You can also help raise awareness about career opportunities in manufacturing and facilitate connections between job seekers and employers. Those communications back and forth is what helps.
Are temporary agencies a good thing?
It's according to the need of the organization. I reflect back, we normally hired ourselves when I was in HR, and then corporate came down and said, we want you to take a look and start using contract services. And if you got a good relationship with those contract services, you can do a lot of things to sort of make sure that you got the right worker in the right place at the right time. And there's benefits. Some organizations feel that they do a better job hiring themselves, but what I see is instead of outsourcing, they're hiring people to do the recruitment and bringing people in and helping them through the onboarding process and all that kind of stuff. But there's a place for outsourcing, and sometimes there's not a place for outsourcing. And you just got to find out where that is.
Right now, I think the big question a lot of people have is that, are there a lot of jobs available in the offices of these factories? A lot of people, that's their goal, I think.
Well, it's in most cases, what you hear is the factory entry-level positions. You got to serve your time out there on the factory floor. But in reality, there's a lot of jobs that come open in the office areas that you don't hear too much about. Maybe it's because that they're using the outsourced organizations to find those higher skilled, as they look at it, higher skilled personnel. And the ones that are advertised a lot are the like I say, the entry level positions. But you know, you could have somebody in HR, you need an HR assistant, you need quality people, you need engineers. Engineers pay well, and a lot of those other departments that are within the organization that have office type, as they look at it, office type jobs, yeah, they pay well.
Well, and I also think that when you go to a temp agency as opposed to hiring direct, temp agencies, and I'm not saying they're all this way, but it seems like if you walked into a temp agency with a bachelor's degree, they're still going to probably put you on the line because that's what they're there to fill. But if you hire indirect and the HR person for that business is looking at you, they might not think that that's the best place for you if they have another position opened.
Hey, you hear a lot of things like that. And I remember hiring people that somebody would say they're overqualified and not hire them. If they had a need and the desire was there, then we worked with them. And I think that's the big thing. It doesn't matter whether you're outsourcing and you got to hire a contract person or whether you're hiring direct. You know, it's according to the individual themselves, and you got to listen to where they're at in their life and what they need.
You know, we're talking about community organizations here. Do community organizations, or are community organizations, usually receptive to trying to better this in areas?
Yeah, I believe so. And there's, I think culture comes into play again in a lot of that. And if you're a people-oriented business and understand that labor is an investment and not a cost, that you're going to stand a better chance of making sure that you get the quality people you need and you retain them. So those are some of the things that I think about when you ask a question like that.
You know, it's also always interesting to hear firsthand from people when they say, I loved my time in manufacturing, got a good retirement, enjoyed what I did, and you will too. And a lot of times that person doesn't too. You know, people are different, people to people.
Yeah. If you're out there and you're talking to people in different facets of life, and you see somebody in construction that's been there and they leave, they're making $50 an hour when they leave. They had a good benefit package, and they feel comfortable. They can, you know, maybe they spent 30 years on the job or 35 years on the job, and they leave before they're 60 years old. And you say, okay, are you ready for that? You know, and you have some discussions with them and that kind of thing. But then you got others that didn't plan things out so well, and they're struggling.
Why is manufacturing not seen, or working in a factory, however people want to describe it? It for a long time, it was not seen in schools as this is what I want to do when I grow up. When you would ask a kid, a student, what do you want to be when you grow up? Doctor, veterinarian, teacher. You know, sometimes you would get, you know, work with animals. You would hear a lot of different answers. Very rarely did you ever hear somebody say, I want to work in a factory, or I want to work in manufacturing. Now, they might have ended up there when something else didn't work out, but it never was their first choice, and it never was really pushed that way.
Yeah. Hey, it's one that you have my mind churning. And you can reflect back that the discussion, sometimes they throw everything on the counselors. Or you got the schools that want to make sure that they get their funding, and the student doesn't go on to like a career center, and they figure out how to keep them there. And maybe the focus of that school was basically college career. But to answer your question even further, is if you would walk down the halls of the school, say a decade or so ago, and what would you see? You would see military there, you'd see colleges there, you'd see healthcare there, but you didn't see manufacturing. It wasn't plastered on the wall, you know. They weren't advertising and everything like that now. It's changing. So in career centers especially, you'll have the wall with these are students and this is where they're working now. And these are the kind of jobs they have, and they're making a living wage. But I think a lot of it was just, you know, what the school wanted to do with coaching those kids how to do that.
You know, as you say that, something comes to my mind, and it's very interesting. If you would go back, I think, 20 or 30 years, an answer that you might hear in Marion, Ohio, for example, what do you want to do, if you asked a student, there wasn't a whole lot of medical in that. You didn't hear a whole lot of people saying, I want to be a nurse, I want to be a doctor. But as Ohio Health became a big player in Marion, spent a lot of money, wages were good if you could get in at Ohio Health, that may have surpassed. I don't know where it is on the list now, but when you talk to people in school, students, a lot of them want to work in medical. It might be the number one now because Ohio Health has a presence at these job fairs. They have a presence in the high school. They have a presence in the college. They've really done a good job at that.
Yes, they have. Even today, I was in a meeting yesterday, and Vita was one of the speakers, and they talked about logistics. And you don't think of that when it comes to healthcare. But, you know, logistics normally I think of as distribution centers or trucking or in the factory, you know, and supply chain and then those kind of things. But when you see a speaker come in from healthcare, they talk about that. You know, it sort of opens your mind up a little bit to all the kind of opportunities other than being a nurse or a doctor and that kind of thing. An example I think we might have talked about the last time I was here was a student that graduated from Tri-Rivers in robotics and went to college to further education and decided to use those skills in the healthcare, in the medical field. So a lot just depends on what that student wants to do and where they want to go, because manufacturing opens a lot of opportunities, and they're making medical things. They're making automotive, any kind of transportation, furniture, anything you see in your home or in the office, manufacturing is making that.
You know, it's very interesting you mentioned that, because Tri-Rivers has done a great job here in Marion of developing robotics, and obviously the state recognizes that, the work that they've done as a vocational school. And really, for the first time in a long time, robotics has brought manufacturing back into the picture for students. Has robotics, in a way, been the savior of getting this young group interested in manufacturing again?
You know, that's another one that has your mind churning back to when Ramtech was formed. And prior to that, the discussions going on in the community. And it was engineering focused. So they want to teach them automation, robotics, and everything it wraps around that. And they hit the nail on the head. And then out of the Tri-Rivers Ramtech, I think there might be 20 other Ramtechs in Ohio. So it's one that created a stir, and there was a lot of interest. But if you would take a tour when the students are there and see them hands-on with the type of equipment and machinery they're working with, it gives them a good head start on landing a job. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be manufacturing, but if it's an engineer type job, it could be anywhere.
How can we attract and retain skilled workers in the manufacturing industry?
That's a good question. I think attraction, again, is that business is promoting themselves as a good people person organization. I think culture is, again, comes into play in the environment they work in. Of course, wage and benefit package. But to some of the younger kids, just want the money. So they don't concern themselves about health care and prescription plans and that kind of thing, unless they're thinking family. And they're going to get married, and they're going to have kids, and they want to buy a house, they want to do this, then you know, those kind of things come into play as they're making their decisions on where they're going to work and whether they want to remain there. But those are kind of things that come to mind in how to attract and retain people. Of course, mentioned earlier, flexible work hours, and that was a tough one for businesses, because normally it's you got to be here eight o'clock in the morning. You get off at 4. This is what you're going to do, and stick to it. But now they're being a little more flexible with what they're doing.
You know, this brings up an interesting subject that we've talked a lot about on the station, and not to go too deep in the weeds here, but there is an idea that if you, it's a popular saying, do what you love and you never work a day in your life. And a lot of times that is not based in money, because if you take the job based upon the pay, if you're faced with two jobs, this one pays, you know, $20 an hour and this one pays $15. Well, you might not like the job that pays $20 as much. You might take it based on money and not be so happy there. And it's been interesting because we've had this dialogue with people who've been in the workforce a long time. And the answer, which always shocks me, is, well, you got to have money. And you can't always, it's almost like they rally against doing what you love. If you happen to luck into doing what you love, okay. But take the money. Take the higher, you got to have money. And I always think, well, why can't you, shouldn't the better question be why you're giving that advice? Because it almost seems as if you're saying you did something you didn't like just because of the money. And I don't know that that's the best way to go. I don't think that retains a whole lot of people in any field.
Yeah. Yes, you can go someplace and make more money, but if you're not happy with what you're doing, you have to have a passion for what you do. And if the passion's missing, then you're probably not going to be happy. And you just got to find out what that little niche is of your own.
Absolutely. What incentives can be offered to manufacturing companies to invest in workforce training and development?
Okay. You'll get me back into my Department of Development days, but you see it today if you're working closely with economic development. Incentives can include like tax credits, grants, subsidies for training programs, additionally providing access to state-of-the-art training facilities, and resources that can encourage companies to invest in workforce development. Those are some of the things in the workforce area, but there's a lot of others in infrastructure, utilities, all kinds of help. Getting through red tape is one big one.
Why is there so much red tape?
Regulatory and compliance, but when you move into a community, if you're a business, and you can take a look at some of the ones that bought farmland, and they had to make sure that the everything passed specification wise. I think they even put some kind of certification on preparing that land so you can do a business there, and that kind of thing. They may choose because. One, for example, in Wyandotte County is Dreyfus and soybean plant. And I don't know how many acres they purchased there, but it's almost going to be a village. And they've got rail access. They've got road access. And you'll see some ponds that weren't there before to probably take care of some of the environmental type things. So it's interesting to watch things happen. But, if you're not up to snuff on regulations and everything else, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough road. How can we improve collaboration between businesses, educational institutions, and government to address workforce needs?
I'm big on collaboration, so it's connect, collaborate, and leverage resources. Improving collaboration is where it is. And one of the biggest things in working in the counties when we first started was communication came at the top. And then you ask them what they mean by communication, and then you get a little deeper into that. And partnership initiatives, establishing advisory councils, hosting industry roundtables, creating joint task force that can and that can align efforts and address workforce needs collectively instead of, you know, doing it on your own. And I believe I used the term the last time. What we found was instead of silos, we called them islands of excellence. There are certain organizations that were doing a good job at what they're doing, but we need to connect them and get them to collaborate and leverage resources.
Do you find, and obviously not speaking of anybody in particular, but when the government gets involved in these things, a lot of people in government are elected to these positions, and they may not necessarily have a background in them, but they think they can fix the problem. Even though there is no background, and they don't consult anybody who might have a background in that position. Is that problematic?
I don't think it's as big as what people think. Again, I can go back and say, okay, we're knocking on the door, we're government, we're here to help you, and they'd sort of hold up the cross sign and say, stay away from us, you know, back in those days. And sometimes you don't. The people say we don't want to get government involved because all the red tape and all the hoops we have to jump through and things like that. There's an organization in Ohio now that wasn't there decades ago, and that's Jobs Ohio. And instead of Department of Development having economic development people, and it was 12 regions when I was in there, and now it's a private organization. And they're the ones that work closely with government. So they sort of removed that third-person type thing, and you deal with Jobs Ohio, and they'll pull all the resources in to help with that. In our area here, you're one Columbus, Central Ohio, and then some of the counties that we serve are Regional Growth Partnership out of Toledo. You may get the Dayton Group. You may get up in the east, and you got NEO and some of the other organizations. I think there's seven regions now in Jobs Ohio. So they're the ones that help put the packages together and help the organizations. But biggest thing is going into those organizations, listen to their needs, and making sure you hit the nail on the head.
Do you find on the local level that government is receptive to advice, to collaboration, to people with experience?
I could probably think experience wise that could go either way. And I'll use this as an example. Have you ever seen in an organization where you had a leader and all of a sudden that leader was removed and you bring a new leader in? It's according to how they think and what their thought process is and what their experience level is. So, yeah, you can see both, but I look back, if you get to know the person and see where they came from. But, you know, I think it helps if you get somebody in a government position that's wore many hats and worked in many different business sectors. And then they have a broader scope of how things are and not so much a tunnel vision. If they only came from education or they only came from business, so they didn't have any government experience or anything else, you know, that is what makes a difference.
Are you surprised that more people who are in positions to create positions to possibly help with these issues we're talking about in workforce development, manufacturing, don't reach out more to people who have experience?
I'd say, let's just say a position is vacated, and that's an opportunity to take a look at what the job description was and what the expectations are. And benchmarking comes to mind. So before you fill that position, why not go around and talk to some of the others that have positions in other counties or in the region and see what they're doing and see how things work for them? Or you just jump into it and somebody makes a decision to say, we're going to hire this person, and they're going to do what we ask. Governance is key. So wherever the funding is, that's where they're going to report. They're going to report to the funding. Mm. Whereas if you have economic development with a board, and the board's the one that hires or fires you, and it's private sector, then you're going to see a lot different games being played.
What are the key factors that influence the decision of a manufacturing company to set up operations in a region?
Yeah. Back in the 90s, it was location, location, location. And then you had to figure out what the site selection organizations meant by that. And workforce was probably number two back then in the mid-90s. Today, it's workforce, workforce, workforce. And if we can't find the labor, or we're going to poach, we're going to offer better package than what somebody else is doing, and that's when everybody gets concerned a little bit that the existing businesses and things like that. But, you know, it's you go in... again, I'll use Dreyfus as an organization that is locating in Wyandotte County. And infrastructure is a big play, you know, because I mentioned they got rail access, they got roadway. The city's looking at water and waste and those kind of things to help. And you just see the organizations coming together. Incentive packages, yes, but that organization is willing to pay the dollars to develop that land and to make it what they want.
How can we ensure that workforce development initiatives are inclusive and benefit all community members?
Inclusiveness probably includes creating programs that are accessible to diverse populations, including underrepresented groups. It can also include offering scholarships, providing language support, especially today's world, and addressing barriers such as childcare and transportation. Those are kind of things that come to mind. Again, affordable housing. If we're going to help and ensure the workforce initiatives are inclusive and benefits all, those are some of the things that come to mind. And that's where, again, tying economic development, workforce development, and community development together, because it, as I've heard before, it takes a village. It's not just a person that's doing everything.
Do really all areas of any job you would want to do, does everybody pretty much face these problems?
Yes, would be my first answer. But again, you look at leaders in organizations, and for some reason, things are happening in those organizations where you have leadership that really understands what's going on. And then in other areas, you might see that things aren't going as well. But again, it's that team type effort. What I've seen lately is that if you want to be a good leader, it's not about you. It's about developing your people so they can perform at the highest level. And if you do that, or I can go back, I was production I guess I had all second shift in production, and the gentleman that was over was who I reported to. I says, I'd like to have your job. He says, Frank, here's the key. If we think that there's nobody else to replace you, what are we going to do? We're going to keep you in that job as long as we can. But he said, if you work to help somebody do your job, and we know that there's somebody that can do your job, then that gives you a chance to move up in the organization. Now think about that in leadership roles as helping people. I can think of somebody that came in when I hired him in as a co-op student. And today he's vice president of production. You know, it's like you just help people do what they want to do. Rich Ramey was one of the people that I supervised and hired in, and he took advantage of an apprenticeship program that we had. And look where he's at today and what he's done in the robotics and large player in Ramtech and still doing stuff around the state and the country in that area. So you can think of people like that, and it's helping them do what they want to do.
And doing what you want to do is not necessarily where you start, is it? Sometimes you start in a position maybe you like, but once you get in there and you say, wow, I'd really like to do that position, and maybe one day you will.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I guess that can be answered in many ways. But if you have in mind when you join a manufacturing organization that you're going to jump right in and get one of the higher paying jobs right out of the gate, sometimes that doesn't work that way. And maybe you have to pay your dues and start as a press operator and work your way up group leader, supervisor, and whatever else is offered. But it's one of the things that you have to be continuous learning, learn and unlearn, and learn and unlearn again. But I think the key is that don't set your sights too high, but yet if you're working towards that, do you have experience? Do you have the education and training behind that? But the actual application of what you've learned makes a difference. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And I do want to let people know Frank Gibson is the guest here this morning. We are at the top of the hour here, so we're going to take a quick time out for some news and weather, but we're going to come back. Frank's going to remain with us. And if you have a question, we will start taking calls in the second hour. Workforce development is the discussion this morning, and it's brought to you by the Industrial Channel here on WGH Talk. We'll be back in 15 minutes. And if you have a question, we will open up the phone line. Stay with us.
You're the only Marla I've ever known, and thank goodness, because you're one of a kind.
I've got two Marlas.
Oh, there is another Marla.